This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy to be here in the studio of Tan Talk Radio Network behind the microphone again. Oh boy. And it was nice. On Tuesday, I actually had my first in-studio guest. I miss that. It's really terrible that we have to social distance so much and that I can't bring anybody in. It was safe. We were far apart, but it's still, you know, a big problem. And it's not as much fun when I can't bring people in. Now, my next guest I also can't bring in, and usually he comes in every month, Bill Larson from Larson & Larson, and he'll be on the phone today because, again, we're all taking special precautions. I just realized I was sitting here waiting to get on the air, and I had my mask on. You get so used to the thing. But people, please, please don't get violent with people who don't have their mask on. I don't understand why, if somebody doesn't have a mask on, you want to get violent with them, because then they might start spitting on you. And I wouldn't. I would just stay away from them and ask, you know, just, I don't know. It's a little scary, because I did see an incident in a major grocery store here, and I was a little shocked to see it. That was a little too much. You know, sometimes people run in the store and they forget. It's like you forget you have it on. Sometimes you forget you don't have it on. So I just wish all of you would take a little breath, well, fresh air, if you pull your mask down for a minute, and think about not getting violent, because it doesn't help, I assure you. And I'm going to have Bill Larson on in a minute, and he'll tell you that it really doesn't help. But I do want to also say a few special words before I get Bill on. I want to thank my goddaughter, Kanisha. She's so wonderful. She's so beautiful. And she brought me a beautiful plant, and I want to thank her so much for that. I want to thank Andrea Liotis for her wonderful flowers and also a beautiful card that she did for me. And I want to thank Andrew Grant. He sent me a box of books, autographed books. It was so heavy when it arrived, I could hardly pick it up. And there inside, he had 8 of his books all signed just for me. And it was really a thrill. Well, like I need more books in my house, but I do. And I'm making a special shelf for Andrew Grant because, the next book that comes out is going to be, he's going to have his new name, Andrew Child. And it's so funny. I don't know how I'm going to get used to saying Andrew Child, because I actually call him Drew. But he's, we've talked about, he is teaming up with his brother, Lee Child, and together they are writing. Oh, they're going to keep going here. It's just really exciting that he sent me those books. And so I want to thank everybody for all of that and for the messages. And it's a shame I can't have him here in the studio with me, but I am so happy to have Bill Larson of Larson & Larson on the phone to talk about. I've been getting a lot of emails from all of you people. Some of you are getting into trouble. So Bill Larson is going to be talking about that. And it's really, I miss having him and his wife in the studio. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, well, this is it's a strange time, isn't it?
It is a very strange time.
Wow.
And it seems like piracy and infringement is just going rampant.
Oh, it is. It is. It's like people are trying to figure out any way to make money, and they don't hesitate. So let's talk a little bit about this big story that the whole thing that, companies, major, companies that look like they're major companies are pirating work.
Yes, and they're doing it in other countries because they can sneak in through the internet to the United States, and it's hard to nail them down, and it's hard to get U.S. jurisdiction. So in these cases, you have this Ukrainian company that is pirating all of these great works and then selling them on what looks to be a legitimate website. But it's not. It's a pirate website run remotely somewhere in the Ukraine. It's very hard to run down, so you can't really find out who the people are, because they use a series of different computer servers and such to move the signal around, so it's very hard to nail them down unless you're a CIA-level analyst. And so the best we can do, and what the Authors Guild and the authors in this case have done, is kind of teamed up and filed a lawsuit, and they're hoping what the best they can do is to knock down these websites and attempt to find out who they are. They probably won't, but at least they can knock down these websites and keep the material off the internet. And that's what's going on in that particular website lawsuit.
Well, let's take a step back and tell people about this lawsuit. Amazon Publishing, Penguin Random House, and they've done this lawsuit against a piracy site, Kiss Library, which has many names. I mean, that's a problem. They'll come out with one name, and then they use another name for a website, and they might have half a dozen different names.
They'll pop back up, and so, in our firm, we kind of call this whack-a-mole, because you can never really stop them 100%. All you can do is just keep knocking them down, so it's an ongoing endeavor. So they'll knock these sites down, they'll pop up on another site, and then you have to go find that site and then file more papers either with the district court or with the website or the arbitration protocols that are available, and just keep knocking the sites down. Another thing that we try to do is we try to knock down their PayPal. So we'll file papers so that they can't collect money. So we have a range of things we can do, but the first thing you have to do, and all authors and artists need to do, if you want to have any kind of remedy, you have to copyright your work. You have to file an application, and you have to get a registration, because if you don't have a registration, you have no remedy.
So if somebody's discovered that their work has been sold, what's this process? What do they do?
Okay. So the process to try to knock these down is you're going to have a copyright registration. And what you're going to do is you're going to go into the different sites. Maybe it's Amazon or whatever it might be, Alibaba. There's a host of sites out there. And the first thing you want to do is register your copyright with that site, okay, so that you get into their database. Then you have to be vigilant about keeping an eye out for infringement. And then when you see it, you have to alert them and whatever website it may be, and file papers in their arbitration department, and then that'll knock down the website, or it'll knock down the PayPal account. You can also do it with PayPal.
Now, of course, for indie authors, that's really almost impossible for them to do anything, isn't it? It costs money.
Yeah, it costs money, and it's difficult, and it's complex. And it happens not only to authors, but it happens to my trademark clients in counterfeits. You can imagine what Rolex and other large companies, Callaway, I mean, from everything, music, are constantly trying to knock down the infringers. And obviously, most of the infringement's coming from overseas, China, South Korea, the Ukraine, Nigeria. There's a host of just rogue countries out there that are allowing the infringement of U.S. intellectual property. And it's very difficult to stop them. You can stop them here in the United States by filing these procedures, and if you have a design patent or if you have a trademark registration or if you have a copyright registration, by registering your intellectual property with the different websites, and then you're going to have to learn, either hire a lawyer or you're going to have to learn yourself how to file within these arbitration protocols and all these different websites to knock out the infringing copyrights, works, or trademarks.
It is difficult. An author works so hard to write a book. Sometimes it takes years to get a book just right, and often, you know, you finally find an agent, a publisher, and then to know that somebody is just ripping you off, it's heartbreaking.
It is. It is. And it's so hard to stop. I mean, and if you just look around to all of the hacking and stuff that's going on over the internet, and Instagram accounts, and Twitter accounts, I mean, look at the very large, important people that have been hacked just over the last week on their Twitter and Instagram accounts. And in one case, before they could shut it down, they had collected $110,000 in bitcoins from folks who thought that they were donating to a certain person or cause. And so this is how these evildoers overseas make money. And they are very sophisticated. They understand the way computers work, and they also know how lackadaisical a lot of U.S. citizens are concerning protection. And we let our guard down. And in most cases, you know, particularly in these hackings, it's not even anything really sophisticated, something, you know, on the level of what North Korea would do or something like that to get into U.S. computers or China. But what it is they simply call a lower level employee and say, hey, this is Joe from the other part of the company, and I forgot my password. Can you send it back to me? And that person gives it to them, and then they're in. And they're in the administration part of the website, and then they can take it over. So you have to keep your guard up for your Instagram accounts and your websites and your Twitter accounts and your intellectual property, your copyrights. You have to be very vigilant. I mean, this is something you're going to have to do every day if you want to protect it, because it's going to be ongoing. It will never stop.
Well, it's a sad thing of you know, progress that we've come to this. I feel so sorry for some authors who have really lost money because of this, and because what people don't realize is in many, many countries, people read in English. It's amazing how many countries they read in English, so they don't even have to translate the books. I mean, they're selling the books, not necessarily to Americans, but all over the world. So many people speak English, and so many people actually prefer to read, you know, the books in their original form.
Right.
So it really is heartbreaking to know that you can. You know,
and their investment is nothing more than just going and downloading the book, making a single purchase, and then copying it and making it available on another website. And the websites look very authentic, so the customers usually don't know until afterwards. And this is a problem for my authors. It's a problem for my musicians. It's a problem for my patent holders. It's a problem for my trademark clients. It is all across the board, and your intellectual property is no stronger than your willingness to defend it. So just because you have a copyright or a trademark or a patent, that doesn't mean that the government or somebody else is just going to automatically protect it for you. You have to do it yourself, and that means a lot of time and effort, and you got to study up on how to do it, because otherwise you're going to have to pay a lawyer a lot of money to do it for you.
And you know, you mentioned some social media, and
yep.
This is a question that has been coming up more and more, particularly since last December, when one of the very big organizations for writers got caught up in a major scandal, and it's happening more and more. It's a combination of things: what people can say on the internet. What happens if an author loses an agent or a publisher because of something somebody says, and what's the recourse, and just how much should you be saying on the internet, and what's the danger point? What can get you personally sued, and is that possible?
Yeah, it is. And so our starting point, our default setting, is the freedom of speech, okay? So everybody has that freedom of speech, which means that I can say very, very awful things generally, okay, and they're protected. Freedom of speech doesn't protect language that we love. Freedom of speech protects language that makes us sick. And that is the starting point. Now, the First Amendment does not cover language when you intentionally try to harm somebody with falsehood. So if you say somebody has a disease, or they cheat on their spouse, or they don't pay their debts, or, you know, if you make those kind of false claims, there's a set of types of claims that you can't say if they're false about another person. Of course, you're allowed to criticize them. They're a lousy author. Their grammar's wrong. You know, the stories are weak. Those things you can say, because those are valid criticisms within free speech. But what you can't say is that they're a cheapskate, or any of this set of personal lies and fabrications to put them in a bad light. And if that happens, then you have an action in either libel or slander. And the only difference between libel and slander is when you say it out loud, and libel is when it's in writing. But they're the exact same thing, only one's spoken and one's in writing. And your remedy is to file a lawsuit against that person who stated the falsehood. Most of the kind of libel and slander cases you're seeing now are going against the tabloids in the UK. They say very, very horrible things about famous people. And you know that Meghan just left the United Kingdom with Harry because she was being so brutalized by the tabloids. And they filed a series of libel and slander cases against those. And they're very hard to win because they have a lot of money to defend. But, yes, if somebody says something false about you, not criticism, but absolutely false, then you have an action in libel or slander, and you can sue them in state court. Now, here's the other problem that we have right now. There's no courts. The courts are closed right now because of the pandemic. There are no jury trials. If you file papers, you're just going to have to get in line, because all the trains are stuck in the station. There is nothing moving forward in our state court systems in any of the country right now. So even if you filed a complaint against somebody, it may be years before you even get to the judge, because the court systems are at a standstill right now. And that's even a sadder point of what's going on.
I hadn't thought about that all the courts are closed.
They're closed. There are no courts right now. I mean, they're doing some criminal stuff. They're doing some family law. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, law between business people is pretty much over right now. And it may be over for years and years and years. Who knows how long it'll take for the courts to get back up and running. The courts were barely making it down the tracks when everything was good. Now you can imagine that, you know, you have this pandemic, and the last thing we want is to have a whole bunch of people going in and out of our court houses, and all of our judges and all of our judicial administrative folks get COVID and get sick and can't work or die, because everybody knows the one thing that holds our country together is our court system, is our judicial system. Can't depend on the administration, and you can't depend on your legislatures to hold this country together. The only thing that holds us together is the court system, and right now the court system's closed.
Wow, that
it's scary.
I mean, it is. I mean, I knew it, you know, sort of on the back of my mind, but it never really occurred to me that it's all closed. I mean, like you almost think, well, you could have a jury trial, you could just move the jurors further apart, but you're right that you don't know. There's a lot of traffic in a courthouse, and
yeah, if you've ever been in a courthouse, state courthouse, I mean, it's like an anthill.
There's
so many people in there. I mean, sometimes you can't even get in and out of it. And so to have a packed courtroom, and then to take jurors and pack them into a little room in the time of COVID, it just can't happen. And we can't afford to allow our judicial system and all the members, all the people who work within our judicial system, to catch this disease and get sick. That would be, you know, tantamount to the collapse of our country. And so we have no choice but to shut everything down. So even if you want to sue right now, you can go file your complaint. But good luck when you'll ever have it heard by a judge. It may be years and years and years. For example, evictions right now, because of the moratorium on evictions for residential folks, no one's paying their rent. There are literally hundreds of thousands of eviction complaints being filed right now, which are just piling up. And if the courts ever get going again, you can imagine how long it'll take for the courts of the state of Florida, for example, to deal with all of these evictions. because you can't get in front of a court to get an eviction order. And so these people may be living in these residences for years, kind of similar to the foreclosure debacle that we had in 2008, where there were hundreds of thousands of foreclosures backed up in the court system. And that was in 2008, and the system is just resolving them now. The last of them are just going away now, some 12 years later.
Well, I'm glad I don't have any rental. I thought once of having rental property is steady income, but I can see that right now anybody who's got rental property is in big trouble.
Yeah, landlords. It doesn't apply to commercial. It only applies to residential. But if you're in the house and you just stop paying your rent, you can't kick them out. You can file your eviction notice, but there's so many piled up that it may be years before you get in front of a court, and because you're entitled to due process for eviction, it may be years before the landlord can get in front of a judge, get an eviction order, and get the sheriff out there to throw you out, kick you out.
There are so many things. This whole thing is such a horror story. It's like it makes me crazy. But we talked here about people who are criminally intent on taking advantage of people, and I want to go back to a subject we've talked about before, and I want you to reiterate to people how they should behave when they get emails from companies. Now, authors get so many offers from companies that are supposedly in Hollywood, and many of them aren't, who are offering to take their book because they happen to they found the book and they just love the book and they really feel that it should be made into a movie. And they offer all sorts of services to people. Of course, the service always, they always want a copy of your script. And they want to, you know, you just sort of agree to things over the internet. Can you tell people why they shouldn't do that?
Yeah, because you don't know who they are. I mean, if you can't really look somebody in the eye and meet with them, then you really don't know what their intentions are. And so there's a lot of bad players out there that will attempt to take your work and make all kinds of promises and get you to sign something, and then they're off to the races. They get you to sign a bogus contract, and then they're off to the races selling your work and keeping all the money, and you can't do anything about it. Right now, for all of our authors and artists and musicians and patent holders and trademark holders, they're in a really tough spot to do for infringement. So the best you can do right now, and what we've kind of switched to in my firm, is rather than filing cases in the court system, we're using these arbitration protocols on the internet and the websites as the way to knock down infringing use. And that's really the best thing that you can do right now as an intellectual property holder. But you need to be very careful about the people you're dealing with. We have a very strict rule in our law firm. No one's allowed to click on links. So if somebody sends you something with a link, never click on that link, because if you do, they may put malware in or other kinds of terrible software in your computer or lock you out. So be very wary of anybody you don't know who sends you an unsolicited email with a link on there with promises that they're going to, you know, help you move your book. More likely, they're probably trying to steal your identity rather than try to assist you with your book sales.
And sometimes, for example, they will do bogus things, like they'll have contests or they'll have an opportunity where they ask you for money. Now, the chances of any of these working are like zero. I know how they work in Hollywood. This does not happen. So to send money, also, does it imply a kind of consent that you've agreed that they're going to work for you?
Yeah, they usually have some kind of a document on there which they'll use to justify that you've hired them or you've paid them money, and so they have the right to do it. But what is even worse is that they're going to get access to your work, and if they get access to your identity, then they can set up bogus sites and infringing sites and sell your work pretending to be you. So you have to be very careful about who you deal with out there on the internet. Do your research. So if somebody contacts you, go and do your research and find out if these people are for real.
Because they do come out with beautiful, beautiful websites. Their websites are so professional. You really think that, you know, Metro Golden Mayer and all the big companies have that it's, you know, really a real company. Now, I'm a member of
I get them, too. I even get them. And sometimes I looked at them and I get together with my partners and we say, is this for real? I mean, they're very skilled at making it look real, and they're very skilled at saying things in certain ways that entice us to take action.
Well, I think I mentioned to you that, having been in the screenplay writing business, I'm a member of IMDb. And so when these things pop up every once in a while, I will go and investigate, you know, and look up the people who claim to be producers, directors.
Yes.
I look up, and it's true, they are on IMDb, but they're usually, you know, the ones who arrange the flowers, they're the gophers, they're the lowest people, and they've been there for 20 years. They've never risen above, you know. So it's frightening when I see people sending money to any of these organizations.
Mm-hmm. And in this most recent case, in this big lawsuit, you can see that the writers that are being infringed are some of the biggest in the world, with all kinds of money. And still they are struggling to stop these infringements. So you can imagine for the rest of us who are just regular folk, how difficult it is and challenging to try to stop these kind of scams and infringements. Because if the big rich folks can't do it, that doesn't bode well for the rest of us.
Exactly. And one of them was Lee Child. I mean, you know, you'd think nobody would, you know, go and try to steal from Lee Child. But boy, oh boy, they do.
It's so bold. You would think, yeah, they would not pick on somebody that big. But by the time they know that by the time they're caught, they're going to make a whole bunch of money and that money's going to be gone. You know, people are dealing in Bitcoin and stuff. So once you spend that Bitcoin, it's gone. They're not transacting through U.S. banks, so the money's gone. And so then once that goes down, then they pick out another one and they pop back up, and it's a continuing process. These people will never go away, these infringers in the foreign countries. They're going to be there forever, so you have to get used to it, and you have to come up with a strategy to deal with it on a daily basis.
Well, that's why people, I'm telling you, all of you, intellectual property, the word property implies value. It is something. It is something real. It's intellectual. It's in your head, and you've written it, but it's valuable. And you never know, you know, a book might come out today. It's not maybe not a bestseller, but you never know when at some point in time it might become so relevant that it becomes a bestseller, or somebody might pick it up, or a real Hollywood actor or producer will read the book and say, oh, I want that part. I really need that part. So you don't
know. Keep in mind, it may happen after you die, so your heirs may get the benefit of it, which has happened with a lot of great books.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you got to get that copyright registration. That's always important, and it's very, very easy to do. You just go to the copyright office, log in, and fill out the form. It's super easy. It's form TX. And just put all the information in. It'll walk you through the form. Get your credit card out and pay your $35. Upload your work to the copyright office. And it takes a year. The copyright office is kind of slow, but they're super busy. But it takes about a year. And after about a year, boom, then you'll have your copyright registration. And that's good for 100 years. So just, you know, put that away. And that may be something your heirs may take advantage of, because your book could become popular after you pass. Or you're going to need that copyright registration in order to enforce your rights on the internet. So the most important takeaway of today is that if you don't have your work registered as a copyright, you have no remedy in the courts and you have no remedy on the internet. So when you get to the point where you think the book's done, then go to the copyright office, pay the $35, upload your work, and get your work copyrighted.
And I would also suggest to all of you, it's being an author is just like any business.
It is.
You have to make an investment. And I know that you can do it yourself, but there are many times in life where it is better to go through a lawyer. And I am a living testimony to that. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Yep.
I made, when I was young, I made a serious mistake, a very serious mistake, and someone stole my work and and made
it. But the good thing about copyright registration is that it's specifically designed by the Copyright Office to do without a lawyer.
Yeah, okay? I know.
Now, if you don't feel comfortable about it, then definitely call a lawyer if you're not comfortable about it. But most of our folks out here who are writers, you know, have enough intelligence to work through the system. And I got to say, it's really well done. I mean, it is really easy. You can call and get help on the hotline. They have white papers that will walk you through it. And so it's really designed to be able to register your copyrights without using a lawyer. So, you know, take a shot at it. And if you need some help, I mean, you can call a lawyer, but you can also call the hotline. They're very helpful at the Copyright Office. They're really great people. And they'll help you get it filed.
Exactly.
And it's $35.
But the important thing also, there's a copyright, and then for those people who are writing books that might have characters that you want to turn into plush animals or, you know, whatever, that's a different thing. That's a trademark.
Yeah, so
and
you
I've
got
quite a few,
Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
You got Bugs Bunny, and then the cartoon becomes a plush animal. Well, now it's a copyright still to the image, but the name Bugs Bunny becomes a trademark as soon as it switches over from the cartoon, the drawing, into a tangible three-dimensional product that turns into a trademark. And that's what they've done with Mickey Mouse, because Mickey Mouse copyrights are expiring because they're over 100 years old. Disney very carefully moved into the trademark realm, so they took all of their images and they made plush dolls out of them and all kinds of other things and trademarked them all, and so now they use their trademarks to defend their expired copyrights.
There are ways around things, and to have a good lawyer in your back pocket is a perfect thing. And, you know, Bill, I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today, even though we are at a distance, a few miles here. Thank you so much. Tell people how they can get in contact with you, because you can do things over the phone or Zoom or whatever, Skype or whatever.
We're pretty much doing right now. Yeah, I have all my employees are working remotely, and all my clients are doing Zoom meetings. So the best way to get a hold of me is just go to my website, LarsonPatentLaw.com, LARSON, my last name, Larson. And then we have a place there where you can make a request, and I'll get that email, and then I'll call you back, and I can help you.
Great. Okay, Bill, thank you again so much for joining us today here on Joy on Paper.
It was a tough conversation, but it has to be had.
Yeah, exactly. We really need this kind of information. Authors work so hard, and they mm-hmm. don't deserve to be cheated out of out of a penny, because they really, really, you know, it's so beautiful when you see
it's
what
hard
they
enough
could
to
do.
Get a return on these types of works because the industry is so difficult to be taken advantage of. So do your due diligence, do your research, keep an eye out for the bad guys, and that's the best you can do.
And I want to add, you know, for some of you listeners out there, you're home and you're fiddling around and perhaps inventing things. Bill Larson is a fantastic, Larson and Larson are fantastic patent lawyers. They are my patent lawyers. I highly recommend them. And again, don't go throwing your patent out there on the internet until you have talked to a lawyer. Right, Bill?
Yeah, and that's true with all of your intellectual property. Before you start disclosing it publicly, call an intellectual property attorney, get an hour consultation. There's some important things that you need to know, because you can sacrifice rights by disclosing it before you file. And so it's worth, at least one meeting with an intellectual property lawyer before you launch, so that you, when you do, you're not going to sacrifice rights.
Okay.
Very important.
Very
yeah.
important. Okay, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper
Thanks,
today,
Betsy.
Bill. Take care of yourself. And we'll see you next month, or at least listen to you next month. Okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, he's wonderful. And as I said, I have five patents, I think five now, and I think there's going to be eight. He's just a wonderful guy, very smart, and I... And the fact is, boy, oh boy, I made a mistake when I was young, and I have regretted it for many, many years. Now, I'm going to go to commercial in a minute, but I just wanted to say that I was looking forward to having Brandy Colbert on the program. The name of her book is The Voting Booth, Make It Count. And it's a really, really fascinating book. It's really well written, a delightful story. It's a romance, and it's relevant because it's about voting and the importance of voting. But there's a romance in there, which makes the story interesting. A romance always makes a story interesting. And Brandy is just a wonderful, wonderful author. I am so impressed with her, and I'm trying to organize another date for her to come, you know, on the program, because I think she's fascinating. She's written some really, I mean, she's an award-winning author. Among her books, and the one that I just read was The Revolution of Bertie Randolph. She's an excellent writer. And The Voting Booth is her new book. It's called The Voting Booth, Make It Count by Brandy Colbert. And I hope that you will get it. And it's a great little read. Really impressed with it. Okay, now we're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, I have some things to tell you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And as I said, I was hoping to have an interview today with Brandy Colbert, but since she's not available, I'm going to play a few other special things. The first thing I want to play is it's a book buzz for L.A. Chandler. I love this girl. She is absolutely, I have met her now twice at BoucherCon, and I'm so sad that we're not going to have BoucherCon this year. What I love about LA, I sort of call her Lala. first of all, she's noticeable. And I am telling you, authors, once we get back in the swing of things, and once you can start going out, once you can start doing events, try to be noticeable, because when I went to BoucherCon in Dallas in October, I would say 98% of the people were dressed in black or dirty gray. A few actually had some brown, but they all looked terrible. I'm sorry. I just have to tell you that, because there I am looking for authors to interview. I want to interview authors. I want to find authors. But everybody looked the same. I couldn't tell anybody from anybody. It was like, it was so frustrating. But of course, you see L.A. Chandler, and she's got red shoes on. And you know who she is. I mean, she's like, really? She pops at you. You see her coming, you know, from a mile away. Because it's part of her whole sort of shtick. She writes Art Deco mysteries that are set in the 1920s. Absolutely delightful. A really great mystery writer. Her mysteries are intriguing, and they're set in New York, and they just, they're just fun reads. But the fun thing is that she stands out from so many of the authors that are at these events. And you want to make something, really. I don't know, you know, you don't have to get dramatic and wear a tiara, you know. Although, you know, if you're writing romance, you might want to, you know, if you're writing historical romance, you might come with a tiara. I don't know. You need something. My favorite one. This is an author who really took it to heart. she's an author who travels with a romance author who travels with three hunks. I mean, big, handsome, gorgeous guys. Now she's a tiny little one. We're not going to say she's old lady because she looks really good for her age, but she's like, she's not young. So she really stands out, and when she's standing with these three hunks, of course, everybody goes up to her. I mean, you can't resist it. I don't know where she gets these guys, central casting, but that's her shtick, and it works beautifully. But right now, I want to play a book buzz that Rita Moreau did for L.A. Chandler. We'll play that, and then I'm going to come back. I want to talk to you a little bit about poetry.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest Book Buzz Mystery. Today we are chatting about The Gold Pawn, book number 2 in the Art Deco Mystery Series by author L.A. Chandler. I'm intrigued already because this novel takes place in a past time, the 1930s, and the setting is New York City and the outskirts of Detroit. Here's the buzz. It's November 1936, and Mayor LaGuardia's political future buckles under a missing persons case in New York City. At the same time, Lane Sanders breaks from her busy job at City Hall because she is ready to confront childhood nightmares. She summons the courage to face her past memories of her parents' vicious murder. One memory stands out. A dazzling, solid gold pawn piece. She will soon find that the gold pawn will connect her past tragedy and the current Big Apple mystery. Will she and New York City's most prominent movers and shakers forge ahead into a new age, or is history doomed to repeat itself? Find out in The Gold Pawn by L.A. Chandler in the second novel in her Art Deco Mystery series. One thing you might not know about the author is that she is also a motivational speaker. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, well, thank you, Rita. And Rita's going to be taping some more book buzzes for people. And today, you know, it's fun. It's fun to always to have her in the studio doing it. But she's going to, again, do it on the phone today. But I want to thank Rita Moreau so much for doing the book buzzes for authors, because they really need help in promoting their books right now. And you can help. For example, L.A. Chandler. She has three books out in her series. The Silver Gun was the first one, and Pearl Dagger, the third one. Excellent books. So if you're looking for a series to read this summer as you're sitting out in your backyard, hopefully you have a hammock. If you don't, get one, because I, as a kid, that was my favorite place to read. And then do something nice. Write a review on Amazon. You have time. You're sitting around. Just write a nice review. Authors really need that. It helps so much with that Amazon algorithm if they have a number of the number of reviews they have. And of course, it's really, the authors really appreciate it. And I know that you would write wonderful things about this series. I love Art Deco. You know, I have actually quite a few series that are take place in the 1920s and 1930s, and I will be talking about them. Because right now, I don't know, these are the 20s. This year is the 20s. But there's nothing roaring or at all cheerful. I mean, we're not doing the Charleston right now. I think you will enjoy going sort of back in time and L.A., Lala is a great writer, and you will enjoy her. And talking about writing, you know, we talk often about how important it is just to start writing. And sometimes you can just start small. And I want to play a poem by one of our best friends here at Joy on Paper, because he cares. He has feeling and depth, and he writes his poetry to touch your heart. So we're going to play a poem by Jim Lamb, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit more.
Who's for Dinner by J.S. Lamb. In some cultures, they love their neighbors. In others, they might eat them. If you're not sure which is which, be careful how you treat them.
That is so cute. I mean, you know, what can you say? It's simple. It's fun. It's something you'll remember. And J.S. Lamb, his name is Jim, and he's a great friend here on Joy on Paper, and I just appreciate everything that he does for me. But you can check him online. It's J.S. Lamb. It's his poetry. And all of it, you need a moment in your day where something makes you smile or something makes you feel, something makes you remember something. And poetry does that. And so I hope that you'll check out his work and yourself sit down and start writing. You might be writing poetry. And sometimes that's a nice way to start because people get intimidated. They think, oh, I can't write a big book like Lee Child. Well, you know, you don't have to aim that quite that high. You can start by writing a poem, an essay, a short story. Short stories are wonderful ways to improve your writing because writing is not just a talent. It's also a craft. It's like anything. If you want to be a great carpenter, you have to practice. And writing short stories, I think, is one of the best ways to really hone your craft. Nikki Drayden, if you're looking for short stories, sort of odd and unusual, Nikki Drayden, who's going to be on the program in August, she writes short stories. And eventually, you know, she expanded her work and she got a contract and is represented by Donald Moss, who got her a wonderful contract. And speaking of wonderful contracts, you know, you think at this time maybe things aren't selling, but things are selling. And some people have gotten like really big deals. And Hanover Square Press just paid six figures. Oh, my goodness. For an untitled memoir by Goldie Taylor. She's an editor at the Daily Beast. And boy, they have taken that on. And yeah, I like mid six figure. Who else got a big one? Oh, Jessica Williams at William Morrow signed Sequoia Nagamatsu for a debut novel, How High We Go in the Dark. Again, a six figure, and it's a preempt. That means there was some competition there, and she really wrote it up and got the best deal she could. And that's Jessica Williams at William Morrow. If you're looking for an agent, you might want to check out Publishers Weekly, because that's where you find the agents who are really active and current and are up on the you know, in the business of publishing. So there's a lot of things that you can do to help yourself, and one of them, of course, is to just start writing, because for example, this Brandy Colbert book, it came out just at the right time here at election time. She picked a subject, planned it out, and this is what happens if you are really clever about turning your work not just into you know, a book, but also selling it. And I think that there are so many things to learn, and I hope that over the next few months, I'm going to bring more people from the industry in to talk about how you can promote your books during this pandemic-y horror story that we're living through. But, you know, as I tell you all the time, I mean, first of all, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And I have so many authors who, during this time, have now realized that audible books are selling very well. People, I think there's a lot of things out there. People need voices in their, and just walking around the house, it gets crazy. You can't have the television on all the time. And so people are reading more and more audible books. So if you haven't done your book in Audible, it might be the time to do it, because as I said, they are selling very, very well. And this is a wonderful way for you to increase your fan base, which is what you have to do. And I'll talk more about that also over the next few months, because I have so many ideas on how you can increase your fan base, which is a vital thing to all of you. But again, none of this will happen unless you start writing. So I do hope that all of you will at least, you know, sit down today, start a first page of your memoir, of your book, of if you're going to do research, if you're picking a historical subject, at least taking notes on a subject that interests you, and start writing, because it really is a joy to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. Woo! Wouldn't that be wonderful? But it won't happen unless you start writing. So start writing today. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. And I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Thank you for cleaning everything and spraying everything and keeping this place all spick and span. I appreciate it. And I'm just hoping that we can soon start having lots of people in the studio. And meanwhile, I'll say something nice to somebody else today, and particularly to people. Please be nice to people who might forget their masks for a few minutes. And just everybody, chill out, be cheerful, and find the joy in your life, because you never know when you're going to lose it. So just be happy. Bye-bye now.